You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Latino USA is an award-winning public radio show led by journalist Maria Hinojosa. The show is celebrating its 25th year as an hour-long program. This fall, Boise State Public Radio added Latino USA to our lineup. Every Saturday at 6 p.m., you can hear the show right here. And back in September, I got an opportunity to talk with Maria. I started by congratulating her on the 25th anniversary and also asking her how she's been reflecting on the impact the show has had over all these years.
Hey, how are you? Hello, Idaho.
Well, a big congratulations to you on the 25th anniversary of the show. I mean, it's a bit of an odd year for a celebration, Maria, but how have you been reflecting on the impact Latino USA has had over the years?
You know, it's interesting because Latino USA was born out of a desire for people to hear more Latino and Latina voices on public radio. And I think people thought, well, it's a nice show, Latino USA. It'll last for maybe 4 or 5 years. You know, by then Latinos will be more a part of kind of, you know, mainstream America, et cetera, et cetera. And here we are, you know, 25 plus years later. And actually many of the issues are still present. You know, there is still a conversation about Latino and Latina voices on public media in general, public radio specifically. And even though Latinos and Latinas are kind of like front and center of so much what's happening in the news, I mean, specifically this administration, essential workers, the food supply, new voting blocks, still many Latinos and Latinas feel kind of invisible, like our narrative is not being told by us, that it's being told about us. Mm-hmm. And so, I think I always knew, to be honest with you, I think there was a part of me that said, you know, this show is going to be around a long time. So when they asked me to anchor it, I was thrilled. And here's the crazy thing, our audience numbers keep on growing. And the stations that add us now, like yours, keep mm-hmm. on growing. So it's wonderful for the show. We're very, very proud.
So I really want to dive into some tough stuff right now, because I think it's no secret that public radio as a whole is very white. And that can be really problematic for a lot of reasons. Like other outlets, I mean, public radio is going through, I think, a bit of a crisis trying to confront just maybe racism with our own systems, right? Mm-hmm. But from your perspective, Maria, can you talk about why sharing stories from a Latina host and a diverse team that covers issues for and about the Latinx population is so important? I mean, especially in the climate and culture we're living in right now.
So I have to tell you, it made me very happy to know that Boise State in Idaho was picking up our show. Idaho was one of the last, I've been to all 50 states now, Idaho was one of the last five. And I fell in love with Idaho. I really, oh my God, I love your state. And one of the things that happened to me when I was reporting in Idaho was, you know, I was looking around and I was seeing so many Latinos and Latinas across the state. And so I'd say, well, what do you think of Idaho? You know, this is a very white state. It was at that time I was actually reporting on the issue of white supremacists and the Aryan mm-hmm. Nation. And, you know, to a fault, every single Latino and Latina that I met would say, oh, we love Boise. We love Idaho. We love, you know, wherever it was, we love Idaho. So I think why Latino USA is important is because most states right now are experiencing the same dynamic as Idaho, where the fastest growing demographic are Latinos and Latinas. That's just a fact. It's just the truth. And so, you know, one of our taglines is, you know, because if it affects Latinos, it affects all of us. And that really is the truth. I mean, you have to mm-hmm. think about the fact that 1 out of 4 kindergartners, if children were all in school and they were in their kindergarten classes, 1 out of every 4 now in that kindergarten class is going to be Latino or Latina. So we are not this tiny minority that's kind of off there. And I mean, sadly, we are portrayed as dangerous. That is something. There is an outright attack, targeting, racism, discrimination, dehumanizing of Latinos and Latinas. it brings me no joy to say this, but it, you know, we actually see this coming from the White House down in terms of the policy and the rhetoric and the actions. So the incredible thing about why our audience is growing, and our audience on public radio is majority white, mm-hmm. not digitally. You know, I love the fact that our white audience hears something in Latino USA where they're like, wait a second, this is me, or this matters to me, or this is my neighbor, or this is my friend, or oh my God, I just learned history, or, you know, I went to deep central Mississippi to find out and hear from the Guatemalan indigenous workers in the chicken processing plants whose families were deported in the largest workplace raid in history a year ago.
Right.
So that's why it matters. Because Latinos and Latinas, estamos aquí, as we say, no nos vamos. You know, we're not going anywhere. I mean, I'm telling you, Latinos who live in Idaho, they love Idaho. They love Boise, the same as everybody else who lives there. And so they're going to stay. Their families are going to grow. They will marry your families. And that's what the future looks like. And there's nothing to be afraid of.
And that's such a good point, right? And I think what you bring up too, just about history and how whitewashed history has been. I mean, I just know as a white woman, what I am learning that I didn't learn in school when there are programs like yours on the air and accessible.
That's the whole idea, right? Especially for public media and public radio. It is, in fact, to introduce you to people who you may not know and tell you stories that you may not hear anywhere else. That is the whole idea. That is what Latino USA does best. You know, we did do a deep dive into central Mississippi, but let's see, on the opposite side of that story, where we talked to Guatemalan indigenous people working in the chicken processing plants, you know, we did an interview with Kat Von D. Kat Von D is not necessarily known as a powerful Latina. You know her because she's the most famous tattoo artist who's a woman. She's Latina. She's Argentinian, you know, born in Mexico, speaks Spanish, is raising her child monolingual Spanish right now. So we don't just do like that one story. You know, we did the hidden history of Latinos in hip hop because we are part of hip hop. We did 24 hours in a New York City bodega, like a very New York City kind of experience. So the show is really about the very specificity of Latino and Latina experience, but at the same time, it's like, oh yeah, that's us. We get that. Right, yeah. That's all of us.
You know, this summer you were recognized by the Public Media Journalism Association with an award, and it was a virtual event. And you said, and this is a quote, "Every morning when I take a breath, I feel the weight of history." It kind of seemed that you were talking kind of both literally and figuratively in that moment, because you are also a survivor of COVID-19. Can you tell us about that experience and how it's really given you maybe some new perspective on this pandemic, just from a journalistic standpoint?
Oh, wow. Well, that made me emotional. Believe it or not, you know, I hadn't really thought about that statement. And you get emotional because when you're a survivor, you're like, whoa, you know, like I actually survived a pandemic. Yeah. I gave it to my husband, you know, he survived. So I'm very aware of, yeah, every morning being just like, wow, whew, you know, another morning, I'm good, I'm alive, my family's okay. But it also means that I am a survivor, which means that I know too many people who either passed away or who have family or friends who passed away. I mean, dozens. So when I hear people say, you know, I ask people, do you know anyone? And they're like, no, don't know anybody who you know who knows anyone. No, but I'm like, wow. Because for me, this is something very close. It's very personal. It's very real. You know, in my neighborhood in Harlem, New York City now, everybody wears a mask all the time. And by the way, I was a little bit like, you want me to wear a mask? This was before I knew I was sick.
Right.
That's exactly why I needed to be wearing a mask, because I didn't know I was sick, you know? And so that's why now we understand in New York, in my community, why we wear the mask is not to protect ourselves, but out of an act of respect for somebody else. You're basically saying, look, I don't know if I got it. So I'm going to respect you and cover my mouth for you, not for me, for you. And when you operate in a pandemic like that, like I'm doing this for you, then it really changes things. You know, every night at 7 o'clock, we would open our windows here in our apartment and we would applaud and scream and hoot and holler, because that's what we did for the essential workers here so they could hear us. It brought this city together. And what's sad for me is that it hasn't been able to bring the country together. Now, having said that, let me just, I understand denial. I did not want to believe that I was sick. I did not want to believe that I had gotten sick. I did not want to believe that I had this thing, this virus that, you know, was killing people. So I understand when it's like, no, or it's not, I haven't hurt anybody, or it hasn't. I get that. All we're saying is that, you know, for those of us who were in the epicenter of the pandemic for so long, it is a sacrifice. Believe me, it is. We all know it's a sacrifice, but it's what we got to do so that we together as a company, as a country can move forward. That's what I want. I, you know what I really want? I want to be able to get on a plane and go see you in Boise.
Thank you. That would be, that would be lovely.
Thing that would make me so happy to be back in Idaho, be in Boise, see those mountains and all of you beautiful people who are listening to us right now. That's what I really want.
So speaking of Idaho, and you mentioned this earlier in our interview that you've been here before. In fact, in 2014, you produced an episode of America by the Numbers for PBS. And you really looked into our region's racist past. You mentioned, you know, white supremacy up in North Idaho. I'm curious if you recall anything that kind of has stuck with you when you covered that.
Oh, my God, that was my story. You know how you're in a team and there are certain stories that you're going to advocate for? I was the one that was advocating, saying, we are going to Idaho. We are doing this story. And again, my visit to Idaho changed me because, one, I met, I'm not going to remember his name right now. Actually, this is something that happens with COVID. Like, you can't remember specific words or names. Mm-hmm. But there's a gentleman who is a civil rights lawyer who fought to get the land that was of the Aryan Nations. And so he couldn't be more different than me. He was like 72 years old, a white man, a lawyer, middle class, you know, and here I am, this Mexican born journalist. And yet he is my American hero. He was the one who was fighting against the white supremacists. And that is the thing that I love about my experience in Idaho, is that, you know, the person who was the most unlike me is the person who became my American hero in the state of Idaho. At the same time, I'm also going to forget his name, but he's really fabulous. He was the first African-American firefighter in Coeur d'Alene. And we profiled him as part of our story. And his family is, when I think of Idaho and the future, I think of his family. His wife is Latina. He's African-American, the first African-American firefighter in Coeur d'Alene. His kids are mixed and he's got an incredible future, and he's not leaving Idaho either. So I have so many memories of Idaho. Amazing food. I think they took me to a golf course and I was wearing the wrong clothes. I was wearing heels. You know, the beauty, the lake, I just love Idaho. And so I understand when people want to go there. The thing about Idaho is we have to talk about the reality, which is it cannot be a place for white flight, which is in fact the story we were doing. Mm-hmm. You need to recognize all of Idaho needs to recognize that the truth is that your state is becoming more diverse with every minute that passes. And that is who you are. But you don't have to be afraid of that, because all of those people want to be like from Idaho, just like you. Oh, this is what my friend, the firefighter, used to say about Idaho. You know, he'd sit on his front lawn. He'd just wave at people because people were waving at us. Hey,
oh, totally.
Doing?
I know.
I'm like, what's going on? Like, do they know? Like, why are they doing? It's like, nice people. Hey, how you doing? Hey, so
it's just what we do.
People just kind of sit on the door, say, hey, how you doing? You know what? It's a little bit like Harlem. people sit on their doorsteps in Harlem and in our park, and we do that too. So there's a lot more that we have in common than different.
Before I let you go, I want to quickly talk about the book that you have coming out, which is, it's available in hardback right now, and it's a memoir. It's called Once I Was You, A Memoir of Love and Hate in a Torn America. What made you decide to write this now?
So it's got an interesting story, because the book that I actually thought I was going to write was going to be called Illegal Is Not a Noun, because I was on MSNBC 4 years ago, actually, 5 years ago. And I corrected somebody who said, you know, oh, something about those illegals. And I was like, sir, illegal is not a noun. You cannot refer to a human being as illegal. How did I learn that? I learned that from Elie Wiesel, who survived the Holocaust. And he was the one who told me it was the Nazis who labeled the Jews an illegal people. So we do not label people illegal. So I thought that my book was going to be like a short little book about, you know, why, you know, the use of terms and what's the right way to refer to people. And, you know, I had to find a new agent. Mine had retired. We had to, you know, write a book proposal, et cetera. And essentially, got to be honest, they were like, we don't think we really want that small little pocketbook of illegal is not a noun, but we want a bigger book about your life and about what you've lived through as an immigrant, and also giving us the historical context. And so the first person who read this book, well, I actually have to drop a couple of names. The first person who read the first chapter of the book was Sandra Cisneros, the great American writer, the writer of House on Mango Street, MacArthur Award-winning genius. And she was the one who said, go, keep writing. And the first person who read the finished book, who was not my editor, is the actor Raul Castillo. If you're like, who is that? Look him up, because you've seen him everywhere. And what he said after he finished reading the book was, he said, you know, Maria, I feel like I'm armed with knowledge. So it's interesting, because it's a memoir about my life, but it ends up giving you a lot of spinach throughout. So you actually come out with a lot of historical context. It's like really good spinach, like, you know, olive oil and garlic and lemon, like delicious spinach. And you come out, you know, knowing a bit more about me. It's quite intimate. I mean, I talk about the fact that I'm a survivor of rape, that I didn't even realize what had happened until around the time when Justice Kavanaugh was being nominated and we were having these conversations. So there's a story of just being a woman in the United States of America. But there's going to be something that you're going to take away that's going to change your way of how you understand immigration policy and how it's lived in the United States of America. And also there's a lot of juicy inside baseball journalism stuff for those of you who are journalists out there. It's a great journalist's book, because there's a lot of juicy backstories of journalist stories. Yeah. So there's a lot there, but thank you for asking. I'm very excited. It's a labor of love. And I hope a lot of people read this. I really want, yes, Latinos and Latinas will read this book, because, you know, there are not many of us who are being published by major houses, but what I do want is people who are not Latino or Latina to read this book. That would bring me a lot of joy.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to talk to us. It has just been lovely to be in conversation with you today.
Well, let's do it again, because I think you've kind of figured out now, I have a soft spot for Idaho. So yeah, let's do it again.
Well, one of these days, you know, we'll get you out here when life gets some type of normalcy, right? We can dream.
Oh my God. Just the image of that. I like have already an image of like fall in Idaho, the blue skies, the green. I'm like, so there, I'm there. Thank you so much.
And that was my September interview with Latino USA host, Maria Hinojosa. More Idaho Matters coming up next.